Hello, dear souls, and welcome to this episode of Way of the Yogi. It is Sunday, June 26th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
I'm Deborah Barclay.
And I'm Katie Mulligan.
And we are here on this beautiful summer Seattle day. Way of the Yogi is a group that we formed in order to learn how to integrate and implement yogic philosophy, ancient yogic philosophy, into our modern everyday lives. And it is a learning process, and it's not an easy one. It is very difficult sometimes to maintain the philosophies and the precepts that are put forth by the ancients in such a busy, distracting environment as we have in our everyday lives. And being summer and being where we are in the sutras, I think it's no coincidence whatsoever that we are on practice and detachment. So before we actually get into our meeting, I'm gonna pass things over to Deborah for a moment and allow her to give us some updates on what's happening in and around our area.
Thanks, Anna. There are quite a few things happening, which is really nice. I feel like in the summer things get really going here for yoga and stuff. So two things that are happening that are free are Yoga on the Dock, which is every sunny Sunday at Luther Burbank Park on Mercer Island. And actually, I can give this to you, Katie, because I forgot.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome. That is, now it says July 3rd, but like I said, it's every sunny Sunday. And it's from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. At Luther Burbank Park on Mercer Island. And the second free yoga is at Luna Park, and that is in West Seattle. And that starts Tuesday, August 9th, and that's from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And some other things that we've got going on, there's a Whidbey Island Summer Yoga Retreat happening in July. It's July 22nd to the 24th, and that's an escape to nature for an inspirational weekend retreat on Whidbey Island, which will include asana, meditation, breath and energy work, and lots of nature walks. It says here that they'll explore the five natural elements and their relationship to the chakras and our bodies. Mm-hmm. Fee including accommodations range from $375 to $545, depending on where you're staying. And you can check the website for details. That's www.beluminousyoga.com. There's a third annual Yoga for Hope fundraiser happening on July 9th, which is a Saturday. And that's featuring live music by Steve Gold and an outdoor yoga practice
He's
led by...
He's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's another event happening with him, too. led by four of Seattle's finest instructors. That is $35, and it's adults and children. And that one, there's actually quite a bit going on here. It says on Saturday, July 9th, four of Seattle's yoga instructors will unite on Seattle Center's North Fountain Lawn to bring awareness to the benefits of yoga practice for patients with life-threatening illnesses in this unique fundraising event. We also have Steve Gold again. He's going to be doing his a kirtan, actually, and it's a flow class as well. So it's a heart-opening power vinyasa flow class featuring live music by Steve Gold.
Nice.
And after the class, there will also be a special wine and chocolate party.
Woohoo! Yoga, wine, and chocolate. Boy, that's the perfect evening.
And live music, right?
Yeah.
That's July 8th from 6 to 8 p.m., and that's also at Be Luminous Yoga. And you can call them to pre-register at 206-682-9642, or check their website for more details, beluminousyoga.com. And the final announcement is paulmillage.com. And actually, Zanna, you're a friend of Paul's.
Paul Millage. Well, I'm acquainted with him, yeah. I go to his kirtans, I've been to kirtans at his house. And he's the one that actually told me that this was going to, or something was going to be happening. I didn't know exactly what. I found out this is the something. James Bogue.
Yeah, Bogue.
I think that's how you pronounce that. Is a Sanskrit scholar. He's an Englishman who is studying for his master's in India in Sanskrit. And apparently he has the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita by heart. He knows them by heart.
Yeah.
in Sanskrit with the proper intonation and inflection. He'll probably call me like right dead on all those horrible pronunciations I've been giving. But they're going to have, actually they're going to have two things happening. I know that you have the one, the retreat on Orcas Island here. They're also having the weekend before that at Paul's house. They call it the Bhakti House in South Seattle. They're having a mini retreat that weekend.
Oh.
So it's something for local people.
Yeah.
And you can go to paulmillage.com to find out. That's paulmillage.com. And to find out more about that. The Orcas Island retreat, I'm definitely going to. I won't be able to make the local retreat because I'm going to be getting crazy at Critical Mass, which is a pre-Burning Man event. So that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I'll be coming back. I'll be getting, you know, nuts at the Critical Mass, and then I'll come back and get really zen.
Yes.
At the yoga retreat. But we're going to be doing acro yoga, meditation, having talks on the sutras, the Gita, and kirtan, and an asana practice as well during the Orcas Island retreat. And it should be just amazing.
It sounds amazing.
I'm hoping, let's cross our fingers, that James will agree to come and meet with us.
Oh, wow.
On the podcast, so we'll keep our fingers crossed and see if I can't somehow entice him in.
Yeah, that
would be just wonderful.
The website has just this Orcas Island weekend retreat, like the schedule.
Yeah, there's a whole schedule down for every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really good. Mm-hmm. And you're definitely going.
I'm definitely going. Nothing's gonna stop me from going to that. Absolutely.
Does it cost money?
Well, the thing is, that's what I'm trying. I emailed Paul, and I'm trying to find out what the cost might be.
Yeah.
The way that Paul works, I'm kind of assuming that it's going to be a by donation thing, and then you pay for your camping and whatever food you're
right.
bringing, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. So that would be my inkling that's because that's just the way he works.
Right.
But you don't.
But
know
I'm not sure.
Certain.
I'm not sure.
And there
I'll
was
find
no
out
pricing
more.
On the website.
Yeah, there's no pricing on the website.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm sure if you email him, he'll be able to. Yeah, he'll let you know. So
okay.
If anybody's interested.
Great.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
Well,
I think that's enough.
Yeah. Should keep us busy for a while.
I think so.
Seattle's
all
definitely
right.
a good place to live if
yes.
you're into yoga.
Yes, it most definitely is. All right. So let's just settle back for a moment. Settle into our bodies. Leave our days outside the door. Turn down the volume on the thoughts. And find our breath. Preparing ourselves mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically to come together in the spirit of seeking knowledge, seeking communion. Finding for ourselves what is right and what is true. All right, so where were we? We were on, let's actually go back just a little bit. Before this, where we're at today, you were here with us, Katie, when we were talking about koshas and gunas and all that good stuff.
I think so.
Yeah, you were at that meeting. And we were talking, and that's all about, like, physical nature.
Yeah,
and the
right.
whole purpose at first of learning about these things is to find out what it is that we're trying to transcend through yoga.
Right.
And what the purpose of yoga is in and of itself. And what yoga is in and of itself altogether.
Right.
A lot of people in the West, unfortunately, only see asana.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they think yoga and they think asana. And that's what yoga is. and yogasana is it's a very important part,
right?
But it's only a very, very initial first step on the journey. It's only like the third rung up on the ladder,
right?
And it is the third rung on the ladder. There's still two rungs below that, the yama and the niyama, the observances and the abstentions, right. Or abstentions and observances. So you guys are familiar with those. And so it's very important that we realize that it's a process. It's all a journey. It's not about actually getting to a point.
Right.
It's about learning to be content and happy, to be on the journey itself, and to gather the knowledge and the awarenesses that we gather along the way,
right.
And to grow and learn and benefit by those experiences. We talked last time about the five modifications of the mind, and the first modification is right knowledge. And there's three types of right knowledge. There's direct experience, there's knowledge by inference, and there's knowledge through the testimony of a valid source.
Right.
However, even if you have testimony by a valid source, it's still good to check your facts.
Right.
And to do so means actually going and finding out for yourself. So that's experience. And when you infer something, you're still usually inferring it because you know it from a past experience, you know, or you know because you've experienced this and this, those two things together are obviously going to turn out to be that.
Right.
So it's still all about, it boils down to experience, basic experience. And to me, that's what really, really shone through in all of this, is that no matter what, it's all about personal experience.
Yeah.
That's the only way. We can read as much as we want to. We can hear as many talks and podcasts and go to as many yoga classes and listen to lectures and sit at the feet of the greatest gurus. But until we actually go out and do it for ourselves, it's just information. It's just so much information.
Yeah.
So that's what practice is about.
Yeah.
That's what practice is about. It's about actually using these precepts, these steps, these instructions that are given to us, and not just reading about them, but actually putting them into practice,
yeah.
Into play. So our first sutra that we're going to work with today is Sutra 112, Abhyasa Vairagyam Taniroda. Vairagyabhyam Taniroda. And I have Swami Aranya's translation, which is a new translation that we have here today. And it's by practice and detachment, these can be stopped. And these refers back to those five modifications of the mind, or mental fluctuations. Right knowledge. False knowledge.
Sorry.
That's okay, we're podcasting. You're being recorded, so.
Carry on.
Sorry for that minor interruption.
All right. So the five mental modifications, I'm going to try to go over them here, are right knowledge,
yeah.
Which causes the least fluctuation in the mind, causes the least disturbance in the mind. False knowledge, wrong knowledge, illusory knowledge. Knowledge from imagination, fanciful knowledge, which is a little bit different than false knowledge.
Right.
And I think the illusory knowledge actually is two, three, yeah, is the, it's verbal right? Mm. Is
yes.
Yeah. So they specified it's verbal knowledge.
Right. Right.
So basically, and what we thought that really applied to in our modern day lives was like television.
Yeah.
And radio and media, you know, all the things that are thrown into our face, billboards,
yeah.
and you know. Buy this, eat that.
Right. Advertisement and marketing.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Because is it really based on facts?
No.
Yeah.
News,
yeah.
Movies, all that good stuff. And then we also had a sleep,
mm-hmm.
which is
yeah.
absence of knowledge, absence
right.
of thought. And I came up with something
oh.
because we were talking about how can there be an awareness of absence of thought?
Was that with the sleep?
And, yeah, with
yeah.
sleep, and then we were talking about the difference between sleep, which is an absence of thought, and samadhi, which is that transcendent meditative state where you have an absence of thought also, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the difference is in sleep, it's non-deliberate absence
right.
of thought.
Right.
You just mm. fall into it.
Okay.
With samadhi, it is a deliberate. You put yourself there deliberately.
It's intentional.
You're aware on a very subtle level.
Yeah.
But there is no fluctuation of thought disturbing your awareness.
Right. And also
so
that
it's pure type, awareness.
Pure awareness.
Yeah.
That type takes a lot more effort.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Which
definitely.
I think that, like what you were talking
mm-hmm.
about, the journey, the ability and the practice to get to the place
mm-hmm.
where you're able
mm-hmm.
to be absent of thought
yeah.
mm-hmm.
is a big part of it.
That's the whole point of this.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the whole point of this.
Versus sleep where you just sort of, you know, passively fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then memory was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Memories
mm-hmm.
were the last one. So those are the five fluctuations
right.
that we're trying to still. We're trying to get past all of that. So the mind is undisturbed and able to be aware in undiluted, in distilled awareness. Distilled awareness. And then for Satchitananda?
These mental modifications are restrained by practice and non-attachment.
Okay.
Practice and detachment are the means to still the movements of consciousness.
And that's Iyengar?
That is Iyengar.
And then Swami Jay Yaneshwara, who I found online, has got a pretty amazing, very extensive website. These thought patterns, or vrittis, are mastered, nirodha, regulated, or coordinated, through practice, abhyasa, and non-attachment, vairagya. Okay?
All right.
So basically, they've all said the same thing on this one, pretty much. I mean, it's very, very close translations. So, now, what is practice? And our next two sutras deal with that. Practice in 113 is the steadfast effort to still these fluctuations. Tatra shtitau yatna abhyasa. Right? Oh, and I just read a Iyengar, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And you can read Aranya.
This
is that one.
Aranya says,
it's right below the Sanskrit writing there.
Exertion to acquire shtiti, or a tranquil state of mind devoid of fluctuations, is called practice.
Oh.
Exertion, I like that.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And you just said it too. You said it's work.
Yes, right.
So,
yeah, exactly. Satchitananda is of these two, steadiness and practice. Effort towards steadiness of mind is practice.
Effort.
There we go.
So That was my dilemma, was practice.
Mm, the consistency
of practice. Yeah, it's constant, steadfast, continuous effort is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It has to be constant, steadfast, continuous.
Yeah.
And that was where I was having an issue. My practice, I had really gotten to where I was, you know, had a very steady everyday practice, and I fell off. Oh, and Swami Jay says practice means choosing, applying the effort, and doing those actions that bring a stable and tranquil state. And the thing is I had set myself up for failure without really realizing what I was doing. Number one, I had developed a routine that was actually detrimental to my physical well-being.
Yeah.
Had a lot of hip openers. I have ultra hyper-flexible hips, and I was doing way too many hip openers, so I was actually overstretching my hips and causing myself some serious issues there.
Yeah.
And I had gotten to where there were so many postures that I wanted to do that my practice was getting longer and longer every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it would go into 2 and 3 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And in today's, you know, lifestyle, there's just no way to do that every day.
Yeah.
And then if I didn't get it in, I didn't feel fulfilled.
Right.
You know, I didn't feel like I'd done my practice.
Right.
So, nice. So it became my personal whip, you know,
like, right.
I was flogging myself over not getting my practice in, and it became more of a detriment to me.
Yeah.
I set myself up for failure.
Right.
Basically. Mm-hmm. And Swami Jay in his website actually gives in later on in 122, Sutra 122, he gives 9 levels of commitment that you can choose from, and it's something that he does.
His
specific little thing that you can choose from and be able to maintain your practice.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And it's so true. It's important to be realistic about what kind of commitment to put into it, what you can achieve realistically.
And I wonder too, you know, how do we define practice?
Exactly.
Because it seems to me that it can involve doing yoga,
asana.
Mm-hmm. But to the extent that we've been discussing how it should flow into other areas of our life, you know, we can retrain ourselves to realize that we can practice, but in that can take many different forms.
This guy Aranya.
Yeah.
He says practice is constant. That means nonstop. That means in every minute of every day, every second of every day. So it's not just about getting on the mat.
Yeah.
It's not just about getting on the mat.
It's a lot of it. Practice is all. It's almost all mental.
Totally. Yeah.
It encompasses all of the steps of yoga from yama, all the way out through dhyana.
Yeah.
Okay. And what that means is you're walking through your life, you're practicing nonviolence, you're practicing non-lying, non-stealing, continence, cleanliness, contentment, all of the yamas and niyamas, and you're practicing some asana. It doesn't have to be a full hour and a half or 3 hours of this routine.
Right.
But there's also meditation.
Right.
Contemplation. There's inward focus. There's being able to separate the self from all of the outside influx and attachments. It's all of the steps of yoga.
Yeah.
Not just the one. And it's of every moment of every day.
Wow.
Every moment. And that's practice.
Yeah.
And I was narrowly defining practice to be my asana.
Right.
And so I was caught in this Western mindset of what is yoga.
Right.
Even though I know intellectually that there's so much more to it.
Yeah.
Even still, then, I was letting myself get caught up in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there's just so much more to it. And what we're doing right now is a big part of our practice.
Oh, yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a beautiful summer Sunday in Seattle. There's so much out there to distract us that we could be out doing, and yet we're here sitting and discussing.
Yeah.
Discussing yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Good for us.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and you've been doing some new practice now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how closely related getting ready for labor and, you know, I'm pregnant right now, so I'm preparing for delivery, the birth, and doing it unmedicated is a lot of learning meditation and visualization.
Oh, wow.
And just to sort of focus on the, I mean, you know, present.
Yeah.
What's happening, the
right.
contractions and following them and just writing them out. Mm. And
wow, you know, what an amazing lesson.
Yeah. It is. It's just amazing. I mean, it's part of me is excited for it and afraid of it. It's just sort of this combination. But getting ready for it is definitely similar to yoga. There's a lot of, you know, focusing on the breath and, mm-hmm. like I said, meditating.
Moving toward your discomfort instead of away from it.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah. Embracing it, actually. Yeah. It's a lot of
very much like asana.
And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. But it's definitely, there's a lot that's tying back into yoga for me.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like this little micro yoga lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say it's more macro. It's not so micro.
Yeah. Well, in the grander scheme of things.
Like a subset of yoga, so to speak.
I think everything relates. I mean, we can bring yoga off the mat into everything we do. So much.
It, you know, I have so much respect for it as a philosophy, and it's so ancient, and yet you see how it's so applicable in every aspect of life, whether it's preparing for delivering a child, whether it's, you know, being a disciplined worker in your job, or mm-hmm. being a disciplined athlete, if that's your thing, and just sort of realizing that the only way you can really do that is if you approach it with sort of a balanced perspective. Mm-hmm. The only way you can do it sort of in a healthy sort of valuable way is to approach it with balance and
just being a human being.
Yeah.
And being able to focus.
Isn't it tiring?
It's all such valuable resource and knowledge. We're very fortunate to have it.
Yeah.
And to have had these people do all of this stuff, all the work before us, and lay the path out and say, here.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here you go.
So it's sort of create a roadmap for us.
Exactly.
Definitely.
All right, so 114. Now that we've talked about what practice is and what it does, let's see. Satu Dirakala. Nairantarya, Sakara, Asavita, Drudabhumi. I love that word, Drudabhumi. No vowels. Actually, that's you. Go ahead with your Iyengar.
Iyengar that long uninterrupted, alert practice is the firm foundation for restraining the fluctuations.
And Satchidananda says, practice becomes firmly grounded when well attended to for a long time, without break and in all earnestness.
That practice, when continued for a long time without break and with devotion, becomes firm in foundation. So that is the key, is to constantly practice.
Mm-hmm.
Practice makes perfect, they say. I don't know
if
that's ever...
To create the foundation.
To create the foundation, yes. To create a firm foundation from where we can grow, where we can move outward from there. Practice is the evolutionary aspect of yoga.
Right.
It's how we learn about what we are actually trying to transcend.
Right.
It's where we learn about what in our bodies is preventing us from being able to sit in meditation.
Yeah, or in our minds, which is our body.
And
but
what
yeah.
in our minds,
yeah.
and what in our emotions.
Yeah.
And what we're attaching to or avoiding.
Yeah.
in order that's preventing us. And that's why they tell us about those fluctuations of mind, so that we can identify, oh, that's what that is, and more easily be able, because once you know what your problem is, then it's easier to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it's, and it's important to be very consistent.
Yeah.
I know I've begun, rather than having now a daily asana practice,
yeah.
although I do asana every day,
yeah.
I don't necessarily have a set like time that I get on the mat and go through a routine in quotation marks.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do a short when I have time here and there,
yeah.
whenever I do have time. I'll do like a short sequence.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, what I do now every day is I sit down.
Yeah.
And I meditate.
Oh, good for you.
And sometimes that meditation is only 15 minutes. Sometimes I'm able to get in an hour. Sometimes I break up my hour into 2 30-minute segments. So I'll do one in the morning, one in the evening.
Yeah.
My mind loves to meditate. I actually want to get up in the morning and go upstairs and get on my cushion.
Yeah.
And I was resistant to it for a while. but now that I've begun to do it every day.
Yeah.
Since our last meeting.
Uh-huh.
So
for a full month.
Oh yeah. And my mind is so much more focused.
Mm.
I feel more lucid,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think I was being very, what was the word? Ksipta was the word? Distracted?
Oh, uh-huh.
Remember? Ksipta?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was feeling very, very, very distracted.
Yeah.
Very, very agitated.
Yeah.
Scattered.
Yeah.
And now I feel like it's starting to kind of come into more of, maybe not ekagra, maybe not one-pointed focus,
yeah.
but certainly a lot clearer path,
yeah.
to my thoughts, my thought processes.
Now, when you meditate, do you do sort of similar to what we do in yoga class, or
that's
do you meditate
that's a centering, that's not really a meditation.
Okay.
That's more centering.
Yeah.
Anytime that there's something outward that's drawing the attention, that's more of a contemplation.
Got it.
It's
but
meditation.
Can that be a starting point?
Can be a starting point. It's a very good starting
yoga
point.
Class,
actually, I
typically,
do.
Isn't that
it's a preparation yoga,
it's preparation for meditation.
Absolutely.
Oh, there you go.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I actually do in my head go through the steps that we go through in the centering.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I take the 3 deep breaths. I relax the belly, relax the shoulders, relax the jaw and tongue, forehead and eyes.
Yeah.
And then I consciously bring my mind into the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I consciously tell myself to set aside everything outside.
Yep.
And to quiet my thoughts. I consciously begin to focus on my breath.
Yeah.
And then I try, and it is difficult.
I bet, to just
to let go. I mean, it's nearly, at this point for me, impossible. Nothing's impossible. It's not impossible, but it's nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Do you have moments of it being
I have moments. I have moments where, but the moment I have those moments, I'm like, oh, I'm having that moment.
So you need to detach.
And the moment's gone.
So you basically strive to completely clear your mind of any sort of, or do you, because
any sort
people
of
meditate
thought.
On an object, right?
Yeah, so yes, that's a great starting point, like a mandala, or on, you can even meditate on the words of a, you know, a line in a book, or some affirmation or something that really moves you, or, but the thing is to find something that doesn't cause
reaction.
Yeah. That's the whole purpose, is to be non-reactive, and we'll be getting into that with detachment.
Yeah.
But it's practice.
Yeah.
It's about just continually going back and going back and trying again and trying again. The mind is like a wild horse.
Yeah.
It pulls at the bit, and it just wants to run free. and you know, take its head.
Yeah.
Take your head.
Yeah.
And it's really unruly. It's an unruly child is what it is.
I would think that that would be so beneficial to sort of, as you said, lead you to feel more lucid throughout the day and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, from the moment we wake up and roll out of bed till we put our heads down back mm-hmm. on the pillow to go to sleep at the end of the day, I know in my life, and I strive to not be, but I end up spending my day reacting to one thing mm-hmm. after the other. And that leads one to feel very distracted, as you said. And mm-hmm. I think knowing just that simple knowledge, to be able to start your day with the simple knowledge of I control what goes on in my head, mm-hmm. and I don't need to attach to all these things that happen to me all day long. And, you know, yes, they, you know, stresses arise, or you need to get something done, or somebody's, you know, a jerk to you during the day, but mm-hmm. knowing that you can just step back mm-hmm. and sort of detach from it. And it seems to me that starting your day with meditation mm-hmm. would be such a great introduction to your day, because it's sort of, you go into the day knowing that you have that ability. I mean, we choose to react. We choose to attach, as much as we like to think that we don't and that we're sort of victims. But, it's our choice. And reminding oneself of that with meditation at the beginning of the day seems really appealing.
That kind of brings me back to this first one, where the meditation in the beginning of the day becomes your foundation.
Yeah, right.
For it's the foundation.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. And Swami Jay, I love that he says practice means choosing.
Yeah.
Applying the effort and doing those actions that bring a stable and tranquil state. Period.
And I like the
at
word
any time.
Choosing.
Mm-hmm. Choosing.
It's not, you know, we don't have to sort of be, you know, we're not being forced to do this. We choose to do it.
And we're not being tossed about on the oceans of, you know, of whatever influences are around us.
Yeah. And I think that's a big...
It's not like that.
Without realizing
we have the
that,
rudder. We have the sail.
Yeah.
We can...
Mm-hmm. We can do it.
Set our course.
Yeah. And too many people, I think, live life feeling as though they're victimized by all these things that happen and mm-hmm. not sort of that self-actualization of realizing, you know, no, I choose how I handle this. I choose how it affects
and
me.
And how I react to it. And how I perceive it, even.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean,
and that's actually
even
probably
the
most important
worst thing that
could
happen. I've had some pretty, you know, hairy experiences in my life, and even the worst ones, I see value in the experience.
Yep.
I see where I have been strengthened by having had that experience, and how coming out of it, you know, and growing by it, I'm glad that it happened, you know. I wouldn't want it to happen again, probably. But the fact that it happened isn't, oh, woe is me.
Right.
You know, oh, poor, poor, pitiful me. I'm so beat down and put upon by the universe. No.
Right.
I chose to put myself in the place that I was to have had the experience in the first place.
Right.
That was my choice.
Right.
And so the fact that I had the experience and was able to come out of it and be even a better person for it.
Right.
Is a gift. It's not, and I could have taken it a completely different way.
Yeah.
I could have used that experience to beat me down even farther and say, oh, that happened, and now I may as well give up, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
and recognizing that these experiences actually give us depth, you know, I mean, that you wouldn't see life the way that you see it now or appreciate some of the things that you appreciate now had you not had those experiences.
Right.
And so, yes, they're negative in sort of the micro sense, but in a macro sense, they can actually, I mean, they make us who we are, but they also, I think, allow, I mean, I think they grow our sort of internal sense of compassion and understanding for others and those sorts of things that I think people who lead a life without any struggles and never have any issues, are...
I don't think that exists.
I don't think that exists, but,
I think that's a fairy
but
tale.
There are those who have more struggles than others, and I think, you know, they're...
Well,
those people who haven't necessarily had those experiences sometimes don't have that innate, you know, understanding or compassion towards others.
I believe human nature is such, though, that we are going to find the most difficult path through whatever our circumstances are. It's just that's the way we are. If you are in the most confined, restricted, say somebody's in jail, mm-hmm. okay, there's not a lot there to really cause as far as traffic accidents or going to work or, you know, all the things that we deal with out here in our daily life.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But yet still people make up
right.
these huge things. Somebody's sitting in my seat.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that becomes
the major trauma.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. it's big.
Yeah.
It's big.
Yeah.
So we just have this tendency to create drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
So even though this person is going through having amputation because his arm got blown off in a war, which right. is really a hard struggle, yeah. and this woman broke her nail,
yeah,
you know, getting out of a Rolls Royce,
right?
Okay,
yeah.
Believe me, the yeah. woman who broke her nail can make it just as much
yeah.
a horrible event as right. the person who lost their arm,
yeah,
if she chooses yeah. to. So it really is. It's a matter of where we put our perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is what yoga is teaching us, is to not let any of those extremes
yeah.
mm-hmm. affect us.
Yeah.
To be able to maintain the tranquil state of mind and just see the beauty in the fact that we have this prakriti, this world of nature around us. That is here to as our playground, basically, yeah. to be able to teach us how to feel and what love is and what suffering is and what it means to be alive, and yet also gives us the knowledge of Purusha, the soul, that we have at any time the ability to transcend that.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Because although we're in the world, we are not of the world. Yeah. There's something in us that transcends it, that is more than
yeah.
just this material, you know, surrounding this material environment. So, and that's another thing that really struck me the other day is how huge this actually is.
Yeah.
My ego loves to be alive. I want to experience everything I experience.
Yeah.
I crave having fun, and I crave watching sad movies and crying and
yeah.
and having all those extremes of emotion, and yeah. it's part of the ego's way that it reaffirms itself as yeah. being alive,
right,
and keeps its hold on us to
yeah.
keep it alive,
yeah.
right. But the whole goal of yoga is to rise above that,
yeah.
so that none of this really ultimately matters,
right.
And that's a hard thing to come to grips with, that do I really want to just be able to let go
yeah.
of all of it?
Well, and, you know, our culture doesn't really welcome that.
No, it doesn't. It's very materialistic.
Really doesn't. No, it really values the ego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the materialism and the...
And the individual.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Right, and not
well. And success
immediate.
Is almost based on that. I mean,
yeah.
you really have to
yeah.
be.
We're
ready
driven
to
succeed,
right,
to
yeah.
achieve, you know, to
and not really to
have
success
have,
with instant
have,
gratification.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Those things
fast,
make
fast,
it a little
fast,
harder.
You know, yeah.
Uh-huh. And all those things reaffirm the ego and,
right.
and its grip on us.
Yeah.
And it's really a big thing. To make the choice.
Yeah.
And say, okay, I'm going to work toward non-attachment.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
And everybody's going, what?
Yeah. Why would you want to do that? But once you even get a small taste of it, you realize of this sort of striving for equanimity, and you realize how appealing it's just how much more appealing
it is.
Oh yeah, I mean
it really is.
It's just yeah.
to be able to enjoy life without fear of losing it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the key. That's the whole thing, is it's the fear of what we can lose is always there.
You know, it's interesting because I was just watching a show on public television not long ago, and it was I don't know why I was drawn to it, but it was called In My Time of Dying, and it was actually a local production, and it focused on, it interviewed various people who were living with terminal illnesses, primarily cancer, and how each of them, from a spiritual perspective, were kind of trying to come to terms with the fact that their days were numbered.
Interesting.
And it was interesting because some obviously had very religious takes on it. One woman was clearly Christian and was talking about her beliefs in that regard. But the one woman who I identified with immediately was, she was very much taking the sort of yoga approach to it, and she was basically, she said, every day I'm still here, I'm not dying, I'm surviving. And she said, she talked about living here and now, and just I live in each moment as it comes. Mm-hmm. And I just, I take that back to what we're saying. I think there's such a fear of death in this culture and losing things, mm-hmm. as you said, losing the ego, losing the individual, and it's amazing how I think, this can bring us peace in so many aspects of life. And I think approaching life that way too, I think a lot of us struggle with fear of death. And I think realizing that there's, when we let go of all this attachment to things that, I don't know what happens after, but I know what happens now, and living my life in a place of peace and sort of transcending all that other stuff, I think, I think it helps one actually come to terms with loss on so many levels in life. Including death, the sort of ultimate loss.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have to quit saying absolutely. I noticed that too.
Right.
I listen back through the podcast, and it's constant, absolutely, and nice. Those three things. Find my inner editor here. So what was I going to say? We all are suffering from the greatest terminal illness there is.
Yeah, life.
And that's being born. Exactly. And so we somehow lose sight of that. We're going to die.
Yeah. And we never talk about it in society. I mean, I look at... I think the way we handle death in this society is just, it's pathetic.
It's so swept under the rug.
Yeah,
it's so hidden from us. We're cushioned from it. I lived in Europe for a while. I lived in Germany when I went to high school, and over there they will show you on television war scenes and murder scenes, and I mean you see the gory, grisly details.
Yeah.
Or you did when I was there anyway. I don't know how it is nowadays, but. At that point in time, they were graphic over there.
Well, it's interesting.
They didn't hide it from you.
Yeah.
Here?
No.
Yeah.
In the movies, we see plenty of gore and guts, but we know it's not real.
But it's like scary, scary. And it's just interesting for me now to just see the comparison to birth. Because we were just talking about it earlier today, how birth is not shown.
Yeah, that too.
On TV.
Yeah,
right. And when it is, it's like the woman is like freaking out and it's called transition for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you never see like
what it really is.
The head popping out.
Yeah,
right,
the baby coming out of the vagina. Yeah. And even children's books, we were looking at those, and like we had one from Europe today, and it was like a woman naked, giving birth, the family around her, just like a really peaceful scene. But in America, you wouldn't see...
Yeah, it's all hospitals and tubes.
Yeah,
and
right.
Yeah. We have this...
And gowns
that,
and...
Right.
Yeah. So birth and death. I mean, it seems like those things should really be more out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like you're saying, in Europe, that those things are seen, they're experienced.
It's part of life.
Yeah. Well, I even look at, like, I really think that sort of Mexican Day of the Dead is so... I really admire that because they sort of... I mean, it's all about death and the loss of their loved ones and their family and sort of, and honoring them and really, that they're not really gone because their spirits live through us and,
It's celebration.
I don't know, I mean, it's a celebration of that. And And it's a, you know, it revolves around death, you know, and I just, you know, yeah, we have funerals here, but it's kind of like then it's kind of done and over with, and then we sort of, you know, I just, I think that we can handle the issue of death a lot, in a lot, sort of, in a healthier fashion.
In a way, I think that's what practice gives us, though. It gives us, it gives us all these small transitions.
Right.
Of letting go. Gradually. We learn to let go of first the really gross physical sensations, and then we learn to let go of the more subtle mental, emotional, you know, and we learn that there is something there.
That's deeper. Than just reaction
and how,
attachment.
I mean, how reassuring is that?
And to know that it's a place, I mean, on a daily basis that you can go to for a place of peace, that you can transcend all of this.
That you can connect with, and that it's eternal. It really is eternal.
Yeah.
And how reaffirming is that, that this isn't all just an accident?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so elegantly designed. Mm. How can it be accidental?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess... where you know. I will stop the you knows. So practice, constant effort, maintaining yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, which is, pranayama can be as simple as just breath, focus on the breath. Just maintaining long, controlled, slow breaths. Doesn't have to be elaborate, tricky techniques or anything like that. Pratyahara, concentration. And meditation. And then, and that's, those are the evolutes. Those are the evolutionary aspects that may, that consist, that practice consists of. The things we grow by and that we learn from and that we develop our knowledge of what it is we are trying to bring into control and know that what we are and what we are not. What we are and what we are not. So that we're not controlled by what we are not.
Exactly.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Does anybody have anything else to add on this section? Okay, all right, so I guess we'll conclude this episode with that. And I forget what my closing is since I've decided to go a little more organic with the speech. We hope you've enjoyed this segment. And we will be taking a short break and returning with the second segment in which we will be introducing the second aspect of the two aspects of yoga, practice and detachment. Okay. Namaste and thank you.
Thank you. Namaste.